Greatness. What makes a person great? What makes a country great? As debatable and political as this question has become these days, we are not the first to be asking it. Of Jesus, Mark writes, "At once his fame began to spread throughout the surrounding region of Galilee." Jesus was trending without the help of YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, or even electricity for that matter. By evening, we hear that the whole city was gathered around the door. Jesus' greatness was on the rise. His disciples were excited. This fish for people business was way more exciting than net mending and fish cleaning. "Come on, Jesus, let's get out there and do some more healing. We are loving it." But Jesus has a different teaching about greatness, and the disciples were not getting it. It was not about becoming a famous healer, even though that was something he had the power to do. Rather, our unlikely example of greatness here is the one whom Jesus takes by the hand and lifts up, Simon's mother-in-law. We don't know her name, nor does she say a word in this story. She doesn't need to. Her greatness is revealed by what she does in response to what Jesus did for her. The more we think about this story, the more we see. This tiny two-verse healing story is also the first resurrection story in Mark's gospel. The verb Mark uses, translated to raise up, is the Greek word for resurrection. And her response to serve them embodies the very heart of Jesus' message. She was raised up, resurrected from her life-threatening fever, and in response began to serve them in the only way that she could. Of this woman, Jan Richardson, artist, writer, and minister, has written, "Whatever she may have said, if anything, the act of her serving Jesus and his companions, her ministering to them in this basic bodily way, provides eloquent testimony in the vocabulary she had at hand. It is a sermon in supper. She is lavish with the language that she knows, using it to proclaim and give praise for what Christ has done." James and John seem to chafe against this alternative model of greatness to the very end. You may recall 10 chapters later in Mark 10:35-45, just a couple days before Jesus would enter Jerusalem and be crucified, we hear the story about James and John while they're walking along, still itching to hitch their wagons to Jesus' star, and they make this bold request: "Grant to us to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory, Jesus." To which Jesus responded, "Whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." So where can we find this Jesus-style greatness today? One place I find it is the Rasona refugee camp in Greece. Yes, this raising up by the hand of God from death to life to serve others, using what we have at hand, is what I see happening in a story of Syrian and Kurdish women who began weaving welcome mats, a 2-foot by 3-foot floor covering woven from discarded materials, including parts of the life preservers that refugees had worn on their voyages across the Mediterranean. "When the first one came off the loom," writes Amy Freikholm in The Christian Century, "the women were jumping and shouting and hollering and crying and laughing." Each of these 9 women in the weaving circle had lost everything when they left home. They were among the 80,000 refugees from Syria, Iraq, Pakistan, and other countries who had requested asylum in Greece. The idea of a refugee-run economic enterprise of weaving mats, using discarded life preservers, blankets, and mountains of donated clothing was the idea of Becca Stevens, an Episcopal priest in Nashville, Tennessee, who wanted to develop a social enterprise for refugee women that was practical, sustainable, and inspirational. What if they took the life vests that they wore on their harrowing journeys and turned them into welcome mats? Bringing this idea to life, of course, took multiple steps and many, many hands. Yet, as Stevens observed, all we really had to do to start this process was get some looms and material and sit in a circle. Observing them at work, she saw them coming back to life. Another place, a little closer to home, was Avery Fisher Hall at Lincoln Center in New York City on November 18, 1995. Itzhak Perlman, the violinist, came on stage to give a performance. As Rabbi Jack Reimer, who was there in the audience that night, has written, "If you have ever been to a Perlman concert, you know that getting on stage is no small achievement for him. He was stricken with polio as a child, and so he has braces on both legs and walks with the aid of two crutches. To see him walk across the stage one step at a time, painfully and slowly, to his chest on his legs, they wait until he is ready to play. But this time, something went wrong. Just as he finished the first few bars, one of the strings on his violin broke. You could hear it snap. It went off like gunfire across the room. There was no mistaking what that sound meant. There was no mistaking what he had to do. People who were there that night thought to themselves, we figured that he would have to get up, put on the clasps again, pick up the crutches, limp his way off stage to either find another string for this one or another violin. But he didn't. Instead, he waited a moment, closed his eyes, and then signaled the conductor to begin again. The orchestra began. How much music you can still make with what you have left. For Christmas this year, my